Welcome to Who Weekly, the podcast where you'll learn everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. I'm Bobby Finger.
I'm Lindsay Weber.
And we got a big episode today because we're interviewing Karina Longworth of You Must Remember This.
So exciting. The amazing
podcast that I'm sure all of you listen to anyway. Because when she called in a few weeks ago to talk about Ronald Reagan and whether or not he is, just his who-them status. Because he was sort of a who and then he turned into a them. Anyway, we reached out to her. We're like, want to be on the show for real? And she said yes, because she's cool.
She has a new season coming out. It came out already.
Oh, yeah, it's already out. Two episodes are out as of recording. It's a new season about the Disney, the lost Disney animated movie, Song of the South. If you thought, oh, there's not much to know about Song of the South, I thought into the whole story, like, oh, it's just in the vault. It's very racist and like people don't like it. That's not on Disney Plus. There's so much more to it. And she's doing a full season about it. Subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. We're going to play the interview now. Stay tuned after the interview for what's Rita up to, because we can't stop doing that. And we didn't do it on the Who Dat episode. We're behind. Thank you, Karina. Enjoy the interview. We'll see you on Friday with another episode of Who Them. Call 619 Who Them, and then we can do
Who Them. You said Who Them instead of Who's There.
You or Draylor? Yeah,
they want to know.
Hey,
Mia.
Hey,
Mia.
Hey, I want to be famous.
Welcome to Who Weekly, the podcast where you'll learn everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. I'm Bobby Finger.
I'm Lindsay Weber,
and we're joined today. We're following up a Who Dat episode with an episode that doesn't really have a structure or a name. It's just Karina Longworth is here with us.
I was thinking we could call it Who Was That?
Who Was That? Oh, that's it. Who Was That?
That's perfect.
You Must Remember This, Karina that's Longworth. Perfect. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so excited to talk to you because when you called in to the podcast on our request, obviously, it was such a huge hit and people were so delighted. And also, I have to say, I'm not even just like sucking up. You gave an answer beyond what we even really expected,
what we deserved.
Oh, thank you. I'm such a big fan of your show. And so when you guys asked me to basically apply the who formula to Ronald Reagan, like I had thoughts.
Like how could you not?
You know, this stuff is really interesting to me because it always has been. Like, I've always been into old movies and TCM and all of that. But I understand that for a lot of people, they need to be explained that, like, you know, Joan Crawford and Betty Davis feuding is a lot like Taylor Swift and Kanye.
But I wanted to say so we were talking about how they're a celebrity. There's always like a celebrity connection. So you can sort of peg your story about, you know, Betty Davis to the Taylor Swift feud or whatever. And currently your season of You Must Remember This is about Song of the South, which has new relevance, which obviously you expected because Disney Plus released their, you know, 8,000 tweet thread with everything coming to Disney Plus on November 12th, whatever it is, November 16th, November 12th. And the one thing that's missing from it that's, you know, was kept in the vault through the way the key was Song of the South. Two episodes are out as of recording. I just listened to the Hattie McDaniel one. I knew nothing about her.
Yeah, no, instead they did 250 other tweets. Yeah. And then, you know, there's just a gap. Like I think there's literally nothing for 1946 because that was the movie Disney released that year.
It's really funny. You can almost, there's so many ways of, I mean, obviously it's a sensitive subject for them not to, really speak about this movie or even acknowledge its existence, but there's a way of interpreting the whole tweet storm as in just smoke and mirrors. Like maybe if we tweet enough, like maybe if we tweet about High School Musical, the musical, the show as tweet 3000, people won't notice that Song of the South isn't there. Like I know that's not what happened, but it's just, I mean, it's sort of funny in the context of every single other thing that is on that thread. There's no Song of the South.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was really thrilled when I woke up in the morning and I saw that was in progress. Like, because I, of course, I knew that my podcast was kind of come out and that it would, you know, be kind of a way of talking about it right before talking about it. But also, I do think that was just a brilliant PR move because it, like, nobody was talking about Disney Plus at that exact moment. And then they just kind of figured out a way to ensure that they would be both celebrated and trolled at once. And so, yeah, I think it's great. I think they did the exact right thing. And also, you know, it was good for me.
Yeah, we, I mean, I feel like we have a very easy time with what we do because everything is so topical and we really like have all of these tabloids at our disposal. But when you, go after something, you really have to find sources that are, you know, might not even exist anymore or that, you know, never existed at all. Like we've gone to the library to look up old issues of Us Weekly, but that's literally the most research we've ever done in this podcast's existence.
No, not really. I started working on it in March, and I don't remember. I mean, I think maybe Disney Plus had been announced by then, but I wasn't thinking about it. I had been working with a couple of producers who were interested in trying to figure out a way to just set a television show in Black Hollywood of the 20th century. And so we had a bunch of meetings and we were talking about a lot of different ideas. And at one point, I just kind of like showed up at a meeting with like 10 ideas. And one of them was Song of the South. And that, you know, turned out to be not something that they were interested in. But trying to know enough so that I could talk about it for 5 minutes in this meeting, I found out that the movie was written by a white communist who was then blacklisted almost immediately after. And I was like, wow, I did a whole season on the Blacklist and I never got to this guy's story. There's got to be a lot of other stuff going on with Song of the South if like there's a story about a white guy involved that I never heard of. That's kind of how a lot of these seasons begin, is that I'll find out one thing that not only I didn't know, but I never would have thought to like look up. And then I try to find if there are other stories like that about a certain thing, a certain person, a time period or whatever. And then I just figure out a way to string it all together.
I was laughing at the part where you said you talked about Hattie McDaniel recording some song and you were like, I couldn't find a version of this song, but I couldn't find her version of the song, but here's someone else's version. And I was like in my mind thinking like every version of every song released in the past 10 years is at my disposal in 15 seconds or less. Like, you know, like the Selena Gomez remix with Bebe Rexha produced by Diplo that's only released in Amsterdam. Like I can find it in 30 seconds, you know? And also Song of the South Who, right? Song of the South Who? Do we all agree on this?
Okay, well, this is really interesting because I definitely thought Song of the South was a Who. And then I started doing press about this season and a couple of the people who have wanted to talk to me, journalists, were big Disney people. And so I've never been a huge Disney person, but at least one of these journalists was somebody who actually spends time on Disney message boards. And she was like, she made it seem like Song of the South is the most famous movie ever made. And I was like, actually, most people that I mention it to have never heard of it. And she didn't believe me.
Is that because, like, do we get a sense that Disney people, this is also a phenomenon that I'm fascinated with, like, you know, after living in LA for 1 year and then, like, coming across all, like, people who go there, like, for the day once a week or something. And I was just like, do Disney people like to embrace the dark as well as the light? They are not PR people. Like, I think Disney people also love, like, the dark Disney stuff, too. So Song of the South would be something that a Disney person would be into, I think.
Yeah, I mean, she was, this person I spoke with was like, yeah, the Disney community is like, release it.
Oh my God.
So
did you watch it on, did you just watch like a VHS of it? How did you watch it online?
So it's never been released on VHS in the US. It's never been released in any home video format in the US. I saw it in 1986 in a movie theater when I was 6 years old. And then there was a Japanese Laserdisc. And that Japanese Laserdisc has been bootlegged. And so if you go to like comic conventions or Disney conventions, like you can buy bootleg DVDs of it. Apparently you can also buy these bootleg DVDs everywhere in Georgia. The bootleg DVD of the Japanese Laserdisc ended up on a hard drive that a friend of mine had, and he gave that to my husband years ago. And it was just like a hard drive of a bunch of different movies that were unavailable. And so my husband has had that hard drive for a long time, but we've never had occasion to watch Song of the South. But I knew he had it. So I knew that I was going to be able to do the research for the season just in that term because I knew I was going to be able to watch it.
Right. Wow. Which is like the key.
Yeah, but the funny thing about the Japanese Laserdisc is that it only has subtitles for the songs.
Oh. Yikes. Well.
Wow. Okay.
Well, then, I guess, wait, I never got to my question, which was that how do you source a lot of the stuff on your show? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself like deep in people's memoirs, or like, this is actually a very selfish question because I would love to know how to research anything beyond 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So it kind of depends on the subject matter. But usually what I do is I try to figure out the landscape of books so that I've been written about the topic. And then I figure out which ones of those books are reputable.
Yeah.
And I mean, over time, I've kind of come to know that there are certain people who are in the business of just churning out salacious biographies. Mm. And so you try not to read those people's books. You try to stick to the more reputable sources. I don't like to read any book or use any book as a source that doesn't have a bibliography, that isn't telling me where their sources are.
Right.
So that's the kind of the starting point. And then beyond that, I'll go to the Academy's library where they have clippings files for every movie ever made and anybody who's ever worked in a Hollywood movie. And so you can read sometimes on microfiche, sometimes digitally, and sometimes in paper files, all the newspaper articles, all of the magazine articles from 1932 or whatever.
That's so fun.
And then they also have studio documents and correspondence and things like that. So that's really valuable. And then I also collect old magazines. So I have every issue of Confidential magazine, for instance, that was published by its original publisher.
Oh my God.
For more recent stuff, like I just started collecting Movie Line magazine from the late 80s and 90s, which is pretty fabulous.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I'm trying to kind of like build my own library of sources as well.
To a certain extent, this still happens today. How, you know, competition among media publications, especially gossip publications, leads to like, well, you got to read, you know, the whole variety. You got to read the entire tapestry of gossip coverage to actually get the full extent of the gossip. But I feel like it happened more, you know, in the mid-century, where you would just get wildly different accounts of things, not just gossip, but news, depending on what source you were reading. So because of that, I mean, I feel like it's one of those things on like, it's very This American Life to me, where it's like, according to this newspaper, this happened. But according to this newspaper, this happened. There were all these conflicting reports. Because there was such a big variety of publications, especially celebrity, like public-focused publications, what is your favorite one? Is it Confidential magazine? Like, what was your favorite voice?
Well, Confidential is really fun to read for sure. And it's also they were publishing things that previous to them getting started in the mid 1950s, magazines were not publishing this stuff because the studios were buying off the press. Mm-hmm. So, there was a brief period when the Hollywood Reporter first started in the 1930s, where the guy who started the Hollywood Reporter, James Wilkerson, he wanted to be an antagonist to the studios. He's like, this is such a phony business. I'm going to tear it all down. But then he started opening nightclubs like the Trocadero, where the whole point of the nightclub was to get celebrities drunk. And the waiters were basically also reporters, and the waiters would just overhear what the drunk people said, and then they'd publish it in the Hollywood Reporter. But then he realized that he was making so much money at the nightclubs, and that if he pissed off the wrong people, they would A, stop coming to the nightclubs, and B, stop buying ads in the Hollywood Reporter. So he allowed himself to be bought off.
Oh no. That's like so media today.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like this 20-year period between when James Wilkerson is like incorporated by the studios and when Confidential starts up, where everything that even like people like Luella Parsons and Hedda Hopper, who are considered, you know, to be muckrakers, everything is being vetted by the studios, vetted by publicists. And so it's not that it's all false, but there's just a lot of stuff that isn't coming out, you know, stuff about affairs and abortions and things like that.
Well, we have the similar thing like that, how American media owns like every tabloid, essentially. I mean, that's something that we also know there are huge holes in coverage because of maybe things going on. I mean, I'm not sure like where everything is reaching to, but we get a sense now that stuff is getting covered up or just not or literally purchased and not reported, essentially, in that way.
Yeah, and that's why like something like Crazy Days and Nights like is allowed to sort of keep going and people keep reading it because like one out of every 20 blinds a day ends up being correct.
And that's enough of a reason to read it. It's like, oh, this is going to be the one.
And also you get a sense of which ones might be correct because you can kind of you get a sense of the way that they're told, you know, and the ones that tend to be correct are told a certain way. Actually, I wonder if that's the case with like you know, reading any type of source, it's like you get a sense of like what's more likely to be true based on where it's coming from or the way that a publicist would talk versus a different type of source. I mean, Bobby, you're obsessed with like the way that sources talk, like a source close to the celebrity said or whatever. And it's like, oh, that's their publicist, or, you know, 100%. It's never like a source close to, yeah, actually.
The combination of like particular language with like a source with knowledge of the situation, or like a source close to the person, combined with the way the source is talking, there are like certain red flags where like, oh, this is like literally just Tree Payne speaking on behalf of Taylor Swift. Like, we right. know exactly who this is.
Can you always tell, like in a Kardashian story, when a source close to them is Kris Jenner?
I think if it is, I mean, usually if it is on E! News, if it's an E! News exclusive, that's the biggest red flag, because yeah. they'll say a source and yeah. it's just clearly Kris not even pretending. But I usually just right. assume it's Kris. Maybe less so now, but at least in like the Kardashian heyday, you know, 5-6 years ago, it just always seemed like it was Kris.
It's so crazy that E! News could be like reporting quote unquote ridiculous. News about the Kardashians. You
they
know?
Do it all I the mean, time.
It's, but it's like, I mean, you know, it's basically like if HBO was like, now we have HBO News and yeah. here's news mm-hmm. about Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. No, literally, it's true.
I mean, and then they, yeah. but they, and also the E! News thing is they scatter, and it's not just Kardashians, they scatter all of the gossip about their new reality stars just among actual gossip. You know, like mm-hmm. I'm scrolling through E! News right now, and one of the top stories is Evan Rachel Wood calls out Paris Hilton for calling Millie Bobby Brown hot. But then if you scroll down, then you're going to see both Kardashian stories and stories from just the NBC Universal family. You know, right. it's all just in there.
Right.
Together. This is sort of a quick little swerve, but who is your favorite contemporary celeb, not, you know, mid-century celeb, but who is your favorite yeah. contemporary celebrity to follow, to actually keep up with, because you've got other things to do,
or least yeah. favorite?
You know, I like maybe this is even not current enough, although I guess if she's still around, she's still doing stuff, but like I like the like Angelina like stealing Brad mm. away situation mm. was extremely important for me mm-hmm. because I was already obsessed with Angelina mm-hmm. and I just kind of never stopped. And I still get really excited when there's like paparazzi photos of her, you know, taking Maddox out in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. The photos of them selling dog treats at the park in the background of What's Her Face's yeah. photo. That was just Sarah like, Ramos. They look like ghosts. Like,
yes. Yeah. I mean, she just, you know, she bought Cecil B. DeMille's house.
Yeah.
And it's like, she just lives, and it's like, it's near where I live, and it's like 5 city blocks behind these gates. And so it's just like, it really is like some crazy, like, emissary from the past mm-hmm. is just like right there, you know? I mean, she has the spirit of like an Elizabeth Taylor or something like that.
That's mm-hmm. what I was thinking too.
She
yeah,
got
I
headlines mean, today because she was spotted shopping in Spain with the whole family. And she's in like yeah. a flowy little linen dress, smiling,
I don't know.
Smiling.
There's one tabloid, I think it might be Radar or someone, who's obsessed with her son's college experience, and they must have some source in, because he's going to college like in a different country, right? And so, and yeah. they're obsessed with it, and you're getting like his dorm room looks like this, his roommate looks like this, here's what he ate at the cafeteria, and it's actually like insane to me. I mean, I can't imagine anyone caring, but I guess there's, you know, a lot of people really, really are invested in these kids, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was in college, I was in college not at the same place, but at the same time as Chelsea Clinton. And oh, like, yeah. there was stuff like that then.
Crazy.
But I mean, maybe she's, you know, more of a public figure. I don't know.
Did you see the Chelsea Clinton story this morning?
Which one?
No,
I
didn't.
It was like she was in some, I have to get this right. Please pardon me. You will both enjoy this.
Wait, was it that she was mad about Beyonce and Jay-Z? Because that was another thing that came out.
No, it was separate. Too. It was this. So okay. It's a profile of her. I'm not sure where it is. I'll find that out shortly. But a line from the profile
I can give you guys, if you're still looking, I can give you guys a Beyonce and Jay-Z story.
Please.
Oh, yes.
Please.
So like 2 weeks ago, I went out to dinner with my husband and a couple that we're friends with at the Chateau. And we were just, like, sitting on the patio, and they started setting up a table, like, right behind us. And there was all this whispering about it, and they put out, like, a champagne bucket and a reserved sign. Mm-hmm. But nobody sat there for, like, an hour. And then Beyonce and Jay-Z sat down.
Oh, God.
And I had my back to them, so I wasn't able to, like, witness much. And, like, you don't want to stare at them. You know that the whole thing is that, like, they're being protected by, like, handlers who are just, like, you know, looking at you, and they have a gun. But I will tell you that there was an order of fries shared at the table. Wow. And as we were leaving, they finished up their champagne and we were being delivered two, like, perfectly icy cold martinis.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Incredible. So fries and martinis. Fries and martinis. I don't think I would have been able to sit there with my back to them. That would have been torture, honestly.
I wouldn't have been able to speak.
Because my girlfriend was, like, sitting across from me and she was looking at them. And so I was, like, mouthing things to her and she was just, like, nodding or shaking, like, her head.
I wouldn't. How could you even continue the conversation? Like, I was in the same room as Meryl Streep this week and I couldn't even function. I just stood there and stared at her. Like, it was ridiculous. It was embarrassing for me, honestly. And my friend was like, you should go over and, like, say hi. It was one of those things, like, you should go over and say hi or whatever, because then you'll get over it. And I was like, I absolutely cannot and I will not.
No.
Absolutely
no. No,
absolutely
no.
not.
She no, was. I couldn't believe they were real people in real life. You know,
and you live in Los Angeles, so this is, like, this should be commonplace for you.
You never see Beyonce and Jay-Z anywhere. Like, no, not in my life. Absolutely not.
That's really funny. I mean, they. Speaking of, like, this, the kind of, like, A list celebrity that Angelina Jolie is and Beyonce and Jay-Z are, it's like there's not as many of them left, or we're kind of running out. Is there, like, this cycle where you go in where you kind of, like, lose your A-listers or whatever? Has that happened in the past, or is this, like, a new thing?
Well, I mean, it sort of happened in the 60s when all of, like, the stars from the 40s and 50s were getting old. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of new crop of celebrities were who's to them, you know? So, like, like when Jack Nicholson becomes famous in 1967 with Easy Rider, it's like, who is this guy?
Right.
And then, you know, a lot of the people who became famous then were considered by that previous generation to be, like, not good looking enough for movies. Mm-hmm. Like Jack, like, you know, Dustin Hoffman was like, oh, he's short and ethnic. And, like, the same thing with Al Pacino.
Oh, wow.
Jack Nicholson actually made me think of Angelica Houston, which made me think of nepotism. And Lindsay and I talk about nepotism all the time. And in a recent episode, we talked about, just because of the circumstances and the topics, we talked about Zoe Deutsch a lot, who is the daughter of Leah Thompson. And she's sort of, like, low-grade nepotism, but I think it still counts. And, like, Zoe Deutsch, Maya Hawke, all the children of people who were kind of at their peak in the 90s are now the age that you are when you enter Hollywood. You know, like, their early 20s, their late
teens. There's a lot of them.
And, yeah, and so... was nepotism sort of, and when we think about that today, like, we're still sort of blinded by it, where we're like, oh my God, it's like the child of Maya Hawke and, I mean, the child of Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke is, like, pretty and talented. Who knew? Like, we love her. Mm-hmm. But there's also a little resentment there. Was it easier for celebrities back in the day? Like, what sort of time did Angelica Houston have coming up when her father was one of the most, like, famous directors of all time? Did people ridicule
her? I feel like nepotism is as old as time. Easier? It always works.
Nepotism is as old as time, but, like, is the conversation around it the same?
Right,
like, I feel more resentment in 2019 than there may have been in 1969 or whatever.
So Angelica Houston, like, definitely had a rocky road, and I would absolutely recommend reading her two memoirs. Her first one, like, is kind of slow unless you're, like, you're really into the idea of childhood in Ireland. But, like, the last maybe 100 pages of it, she becomes, like, a sexy teenage model. Mm-hmm. So that stuff is good. But the second book, like, really just hits the ground running because she, like, starts this, like, horrible affair with Terry Richardson's father. Then she hooks up with Jack Nicholson. But that whole time, I mean, she doesn't really start acting successfully until she's in her mid-30s.
Okay.
And some of it is... because of, like, her and the stuff going on, like, in her personal life. But a lot of it is just, like, she can't get anybody to take her seriously. But, I mean, I think earlier than that, you know, I mean, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. married Joan Crawford at a time when, you know, he was starting his career and she was starting his career and they were, like, a hot young couple. It would be, like, it's, like, you know, if, I don't know, Maya Hawke started dating Brooklyn Beckham. Mm-hmm.
That might happen.
That's
yeah.
right.
yeah. But, you know, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. just, like, did not have the sustained stardom that Joan Crawford did. And you know, she kicked him to the curb pretty quick.
I love that. Do you come across, do you see stories, contemporary tabloid stories, and you have this weird sense where you can see how they're going to be perceived 50 years from now?
No, not necessarily. I mean, yeah. there are certain things that are kind of templates that happen over and over again.
Right.
But, you know, I love being surprised. I always try to keep an open mind.
That's good. That's good. I mean, that's smart. Yeah, it's just so funny to me because it's like it feels like there are patterns and yet I'm always surprised by stuff for some reason.
Oh, can I say one more thing about nepotism?
Please.
I forgot to say that her dad was a beneficiary slash like had to deal with nepotism as well because his dad was the actor Walter Huston, who was a super famous actor. And then, you know, when John Huston started his career as a screenwriter first and then as a director, there was a little of like, really? Like this kid? But he just proved himself really fast.
Yeah. I don't feel like we do that to our celebrities' kids, though. We don't even say, like, prove yourself. I mean, we mm-hmm. do because we're cynical. But, like, I don't think that – I think people mostly love it. They fawn over these kids. Like, there's no, like, kickback, like, let's see what you got, you know? It's very strange to me. Like, we love it when they're famous.
Like, by and large, like, overall, the net result is that it works.
Yeah.
Like, they may get a little pushback from the press and, like, from people like us who are just, like, bitching about it in a group text. Like, oh, Maya Hawke of course Maya Hawke is in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, you know, that sort of thing. But, like, she's just going to continue getting in things. Mm-hmm. She's going to continue being cast in everything. Mm-hmm. That's just how it works, I guess.
Yeah.
Speaking of surprises, which I guess you do all the time, putting yourself in the shoes of just like someone who is following celebrity gossip or following, you know, film news in the mid-century, can you think of someone who was a try-hard, who, I mean, not counting Ronald Reagan, which we've already discussed, but like sort of a try-hard, a very, you know, prolific who you never thought was going to transcend that sort of status, who then became phenomenally successful?
Yeah.
Like, is there someone... Is there a sort of equivalent to that Ronald Reagan, but not Ronald Reagan? Or I can't think of I can't even think of a contemporary one. Maybe.
Well, like Zendaya kind of right now.
Zendaya.
Like these stars who like had these big come ups were like a few years ago. Everyone was like, I don't know who that person
like,
is.
That
obviously.
Person is not going anywhere. Yeah. And then here they are.
Yeah. I don't know if I can think of somebody specific offhand, but I mean, definitely like sometimes you'll look at somebody's IMDb profile and be like, oh, they actually like were around for 25 years, but I only know them from this one thing, mm-hmm. you know? Mary Astor is somebody who's kind of like that, where she was just like working, and then her career kind of ebbed and flowed, you know, like a Marcia Gay Harden or something. Mm-hmm. And then she won an Oscar and that kind of like transformed things and put her in the pantheon. Mm-hmm. But she also had this like crazy like sex diary scandal that like happened when she was at a real low point in her career, and instead of killing off her career as everybody expected it to do because it was the 1930s, it made her more famous because suddenly people were like,
literally
Mary Astor, who knew?
Yeah, like Kim Kardashian. It's like crazy that we even thought that Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian's careers would be over or whatever. No one would give a shit about mm-hmm. them after their sex tapes, when like it's been proven again and again that people don't seem to care about that. And it's not even like we're prudes or anything. If anything, we're the opposite. So it's like everything repeats itself, even though people, you know, will say like, oh, not this time, we're smarter or whatever.
Sort of switching gears a little bit, why do you choose the specific stories that you dive into? What about a specific topic usually calls you towards like making an episode about it?
Well, over the past few years, I've focused on doing seasons. Mm-hmm. And so because it's just a lot easier to focus on like a theme that can contain a lot of stories rather than having to start from scratch to research each individual story. So the first thing I look for is when I have one idea is, are there other ideas? Are there other things that can connect to this within a container? And then usually it's like if I figure out that there's like five or six different stories that could all go together, I basically decide, you know, am I passionate about this or not? And usually the thing that kind of sustains my interest, because it is a really long time. As I said, like, I started working on this in March. All the episodes are written and recorded right now, but we're still editing them. Obviously, I'm still talking about them. So you do have to be willing to commit to something for a long time. You know, usually the thing that would make me feel that passionate about it is if there's something in this stuff from the past that I can connect to the present day.
Right.
And so, you know, with Song of the South, as I said, like, I wasn't really that aware of Disney Plus. It was more that when I was starting to research it, Green Book had just won the Oscar. And there was this sort of this conversation about, like, white people making movies about black people.
Right.
And Song of the South is kind of the ultimate white people thinking they're doing something good and liberal and progressive by making a movie about black people, and just, like, not being able to hear or understand criticism of it.
That was one thing that just reminded me. That was it David O. Selznick or Victor Fleming? I'm not sure who it was in the mix, but I think you said it, David O. Selznick, but how he thought he was doing something incredibly progressive by, like, making little changes to the novel for Gone with the
Wind.
Oh,
yeah, for Gone with the Wind,
yeah. It's so funny to think of this guy thinking he's making some, like, huge progressive statement with Gone with the Wind of all people. But that is the Green Book story. That is Nick Villalonga being like, hell yeah, like, this is great. This is a good thing.
I was wondering, are there any celebrities or people's stories that you've researched and come across that haven't fit into your show, that whose stories you still, like, are obsessed with and looking for ways to put into, like, a future show, or maybe look at a little deeper? Like, is there any person that we would find maybe fun?
Just waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically one of the first stars I ever knew about was Natalie Wood. She died when I was, like, a year old, and my mom was obsessed with her. My mom thought that I looked like young Natalie Wood when I was, like, 5 years old. And so she was just talking about Natalie Wood all the time. And, of course, I didn't really understand, like, the nuances of Natalie Wood's story when I was 5 years old. But it's something that has continued to fascinate me. But the thing is, like, there isn't really a great Natalie Wood biography. There's still a lot of questions about her manner of death. It feels like the story isn't over. And at one point I actually started trying to do a season that would be about the three stars of Rebel Without a Cause, that who all died young. So it would be her, James Dean, and Sal Mineo. And I started looking into it, but, like, the books about Natalie Wood aren't good. The books about James Dean aren't good. And so, like, maybe, like, down the road somewhere, like, I would write a book about that where I did all new research. But it's just, like, I had to put it on the back burner
sucks.
For now.
Oh, I would love you to, because I feel like we don't have, like, someone just did a podcast. Didn't Us Weekly just do a podcast
about
it? Us Weekly,
and it's awful. I stopped listening to it.
Yeah, and they didn't
it.
Do, you know, nothing happened. It wasn't that good. And just, like, such a bummer, because that story is so, like, people would love to hear it now. Especially.
And Robert Wagner is still alive. The story
is
not over yet. So is Christopher Walken.
The thing is that, like, I mean, maybe stuff will come out when he dies. I think people still feel like, don't cross Robert Wagner for some weird reason. Do you guys know the restaurant in West Hollywood, Dan Tana's? Like,
yes.
This, like, classic old place.
Yes.
I was there once with some friends at the bar, and somebody asked me, like, a question about Natalie Wood and if I thought Robert Wagner killed her. And I was like, I don't know. And then a guy who was just sitting at the bar drinking whiskey by himself, like, turned around and, like, tapped me on the shoulder and was like, what? You think Robert Wagner is a killer?
Oh,
and
my
I was
God.
Like, I was like, I don't know, sir. And then he reaches into his blazer and pulls out his cell phone and scrolls. And then he shows me a selfie he took with Robert Wagner. And he says, I don't think so.
Oh, my God. You can't do anything there. Oh, my God.
Robert Wagner defenders creepily sipping whiskey behind you at a restaurant. That's like a true horror movie. Like,
right?
Bloomhouse wishes they could come up with something as horrifying
as that. That's true. Oh my God. And that creeps me out so much, because, like, there's something that happened there too that hopefully, I mean, it has to come out. Like, it has to on his deathbed
or
something.
Whether or not it was foul play, like, we don't know what happened on that boat.
Yeah.
But
no,
I was going to ask you, so she died drowning. James E. died in the car accident. Wait, how did Sal Mineo die? Sal Mineo.
He was killed in an alley.
What?
In
the 1970s.
Oh,
and he was gay. I don't think he was killed. I don't think he was gay bashed.
Mm-hmm.
But he had sort of a secret life, and then he was killed in an alley.
Oh my God.
Just killed in an alley.
Ugh.
Um,
yikes.
Okay, but we're going to stop right here for a sec for an ad break. I love my Helix mattress. I love my Helix pillow. What else is there to say about Helix? I freaking love it. When I sleep on other beds,
what is there
I
else
get
to
mad.
Say is that I come back to my bed and I'm like, this is the bed. This is the bed. And it's honestly spoiled me for other beds. And I don't like traveling sometimes because I'm like, this is not my bed. Where's my bed?
I want my bed.
It's my special bed. It's my special mattress because it is a mattress that is made for my body.
Mm-hmm. I took the Helix quiz. It told me which Helix mattress to get, and that's the one I got, and that's the one that I love, and that's the one that I will not stop using because it's the best mattress I've ever slept on. Mm-hmm. The mattress is so good that when we got it, my cat Winston became obsessed with it, and now he's on it all the time, and I'm you have to move because need to sleep on the bed. It's my bed. It's not your bed.
Wow.
He's obsessed with it. It's irritating, actually. Wow. He likes the Helix so much.
So rude.
Everybody is unique, and I mean everybody, two words, because everyone sleeps differently. Their bodies are different, and that's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. I'm a side sleeper / stomach sleeper. Some people are back sleepers. Some people are exclusively side sleepers. There's a Helix mattress for all of you. Not only is the Helix the best mattress I've ever slept on, the setup was fast and easy. Their mattresses are delivered in a box and straight to your door. You just open it up and it like kind of like blows back up after it comes out of the plastic, and you put it on your bed and it's amazing. Plus, Helix mattresses all come with a 10 or 15 year warranty depending on the model. And if you don't want to take our word for it, Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/who. That's helixsleep.com/who. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Why do you want to learn a new language? Where would you use it, and how would it come in handy? This is what I'm asking myself every single day. Even if I'm not planning on going on a trip where I need to use a new language, I'm just like, my brain needs to stay alive. My brain needs to stay active. And there's only so many crossword puzzles I can do in 1 week. And that's why I just feel like putting my mind to the test would just be using Rosetta Stone to improve my language skills.
And I'm always like idealizing, oh, I want to learn Francais, so when I go to Francais, I can speak French with the person in
France. You go to Quebec.
But really, I'm speaking on a like dream level, which is also great. Use Rosetta Stone to learn the language of a place you're dreaming of visiting. But also, practically, it makes more sense for me to learn Spanish. And if I'm going to learn Spanish, I'm going to do it on Rosetta Stone.
That's amazing.
They've been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users, and they have 25 languages offered. You have fast language acquisition because they immerse you in the language. There aren't English translations, so you really learn to speak, you listen, you think in the language with Rosetta Stone, and it has an intuitive process, so you pick up the language naturally. First words, then phrases, then sentences, which means it's designed for long-term retention. And the app has a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation, like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's very helpful, okay?
That was good. That was good.
Thank you.
It's convenient. There's an amazing value. You can get a lifetime membership and just have every single language, all 25 languages you can have for your lifetime, and you can just work through them as long as you're alive. That's kind of an iconic goal to have. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Who Weekly listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/who. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/who today.
Before we let you go back to, a better evening than this.
Impossible.
We're going to play a game called You Must Not Remember This.
Okay.
We've reached the end of the decade, and every website, every publication is pushing out best of the decade content. So we thought we would do the same, but with you, kind of with a twist, and we're seeing what you do and do not remember from gossip of the past 10 years.
All right.
So we have a question for every year of the past decade. And maybe you'll remember things, maybe you won't.
And these are things that you probably shouldn't remember.
Yeah, you must not remember them, please.
These are things that we should not be remembering, and yet Bobby and I remember everything.
All right.
It's useless. You start, Bobby.
So let's start with 2010. In August of 2010, Paris Hilton was charged with felony drug possession when cops found 0.8 grams of cocaine in her bag during a traffic stop. How did she explain away the cocaine while in court? A, she thought it was gum. B, she thought it was chapstick. C, she thought it was mints. D, she thought it was Advil.
Wow, she could think it was any of those.
True.
So true. I'm going to say C, mints.
She thought it was gum.
It was A.
At first, when I was thinking of the other options for this question, I was like, well, that doesn't really have the consistency of cocaine. But then I was like, neither does gum.
Yeah, so no, gum I don't doesn't know how. Either.
I don't yeah. really know what she thought we would believe, but she tried it, didn't work.
Did she
Maybe
like...
because it was just like wrapped in foil?
Who gave yeah. it to her? Was she like, oh, can I have some gum? And they gave her, like, there's no reason that she would think it was gum. It doesn't make any sense, this story is what I'm also thinking currently.
Yeah, that whole thing was a big mess.
Okay.
Lindsay, 2011.
In August 2011, Chris Humphries and Kim Kardashian married in a hugely publicized $10 million ceremony the tabloids repeatedly referred to as the wedding of the century. Wow.
Wow.
How many days did their marriage last? God, this is tough.
I feel like it's either... Oh, you're going to give me multiple choices.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would never do that to you. Yeah. Was it 67, 72, 81... or 82. Bobby, 81, 82? You're so cruel.
I feel like people knew it was within the three-month range.
Okay,
like under
okay.
3 months.
Okay, okay.
So I actually like was about to say that I thought it was either 18 or 81. So I'm going to say 81.
It was 72.
Oh.
Although you do not need to get that correct because these numbers were so close together.
Yeah. Do you think, did you, just as, just... your own speculation, do you think that whole thing was a publicity stunt? It's a very obvious answer. Like, it seems like, of course it's a publicity stunt, but do you think there was ever anything real in that marriage? Or do
so
you think the
I,
whole thing from beginning to end was a lie?
I wasn't really paying that close attention then. Like, I didn't get into the Kardashians until Kanye got into the Kardashians.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. But it seems like it was just for the show, no?
I think so. I think that
I
was
think
whole,
so.
Totally
I just feel
fake.
Like... You know, sometimes the Kardashian heads will argue about that, and I just wanted to see.
I was watching a YouTube video that was a woman interviewing people on the red carpet at Kim's 27th birthday party, and they were interviewing Aubrey O'Day, her best friend at the time, apparently. And Aubrey
wow.
said, "Aubrey said, I really hope Kim gets married this year.
Happy birthday wishes. I hope she gets married this year because she's such a mommy, and she just needs to hurry up and get married and have kids. Oh, very, very sweet.
Wow. That was her birthday wish for Kim Kardashian, was that she got married. I was like, wow, this is an incredible document. Okay.
This, okay, 2012. This is ridiculous. In the summer of 2012, just months before the release of the final Twilight movie, Kristen Stewart was caught, quote unquote, cheating on Robert Pattinson with a director named Rupert Sanders. Which non-Twilight movie did he direct Kristen Stewart in? Was it On the Road, The Runaways, Welcome to the Rileys, remember that? I don't. Or Snow White and the Huntsman.
Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because every headline was Snow White and the Huntsman director. Snow White and the Huntsman director.
And adding to the drama, Sanders' wife played Kristen's mother in the Snow White movie that her husband directed. And before she pulled down her Twitter account, she tweeted an Instagram of Snow White drinking from what looks like a liquor bottle and wrote, "Not so pretty or so pure after all."
This was a crazy tabloid story.
When I was looking
up, it was.
I was looking up all the photos of this, and it's like, this was on the cover of every like, I forgot yeah. how big this was. Meanwhile, today, if there were a headline saying that Kristen Stewart was making out with someone named Rupert Sanders, everyone would laugh it off. Like,
right.
what?
Yeah, because... Did I mean, so he turned her gay? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, right.
Yes, that's
But just the
that's
fact that happened. She was having this highly, like this huge love triangle with two men now is just a wild thing to think about. She is like the Leonardo DiCaprio of lesbian now. Like, how do we even, how was she even part of this? Like, it's amazing. Wow.
I also think that just the cynic inside me, I think that this was a publicity stunt too, because the photos, when you look at them, they are extremely staged. So,
oh,
like, maybe they were just trying to drum up publicity for both of the movies. But anyway, 2013.
Do you want me to do this
We got to power through these. Sorry.
Wait, Bobby, this yeah, one is so one. Long. Okay. Anne Hathaway made headlines in the spring of 2013 for changing her Oscar dress last minute, explaining that, quote, "It came to my attention late Saturday night that
quote.
There would be a dress worn to the Oscars that is remarkably similar to the Valentino I had intended to wear, and so I decided it was best for all involved to change my plans.
I love
the dress I did wear, it was a difficult last minute decision as I so looked forward to wearing Valentino in honor of the deep and meaningful relationship I have enjoyed with the house and with Valentino himself. I deeply deeply regret any disappointment this caused. Where did she write this?
It's like the most, insane. Oh my God, it's the most peak Anne Hathaway statement. Like, oh, I want Anne Hathaway to write all my statements. Jeez. If I ever need to write a statement.
Okay, so the question is, it was later revealed who the other dress belonged to. Who was it? Was it Jennifer Lawrence, Amy Adams, Amanda Seyfried, which I always pronounce incorrectly, or Jessica Chastain? Seyfried.
Seyfried?
So, yeah. I mean, this was probably the Les Mis Oscars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it would be like super catty and weird if it was Amanda Seyfried. Mm. But I'm going to say... Jennifer Lawrence.
It was Amanda.
Apparently, oh, wow. The rumor was that it was Jennifer first, but then people confirmed it was Amanda. Mm-hmm. And then after all the drama came out, where it was catty. Like, they're feuding, Amanda just tweeted, fact, I love you, Anne.
God.
But the thing is, if she actually loved her, she would call her Annie.
Right, because true heads know she gets
true
called
heads,
Annie.
So she's Annie. Just love that Anne Hathaway statement. It's like before Serenity came out and people didn't like it, she released like
artist statement.
She released a statement the day before it came out saying like, people aren't going to like this, but guess what? It's art. It's very long and scrim caption. Anyway, she's great at captions. In May 2014, Jay-Z and Solange Knowles got into a fight inside an elevator at the Standard Hotel after attending the Met Gala. We've seen the video, we've heard the explanations, but can you remember what the Met Gala theme was that year? Was it?
Oh no.
Yeah,
Charles truly. James, Beyond Fashion. Alexander McQueen, Savage Beauty. Punk, Chaos to Couture, or China Through the Looking Glass?
Bobby, I would never get this.
Yeah. 2014?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to say Alexander McQueen.
That was 2011. It was Charles James, Beyond Fashion. It's just funny that I have no memory of this.
Yeah, I don't either.
Not at all.
But I do remember that elevator.
I think they've gotten better at trying to make the themes a little more viral. So, whatever.
As long as Rihanna comes, they're just trying to get Rihanna to come back. That's like the only thing that they can do at this point. Okay, 2015. I know you will know the answer to this. In 2015, Tori Spelling fell on a hot grill, iconic restaurant chain. Spelling's rep had no comment, but according to a source, Tori hadn't even started to eat when she slipped and fell. Not thinking, she grabbed onto the side of the hot grill and burned her arm. At the time, it didn't seem as bad as the doctors told her it was the next day. Which chain restaurant was she burned at? Was it?
I just want to hear your multiple choices.
I don't even know how you would burn yourself at a Cheesecake Factory or a TGI Fridays or a Chili's or Benihana.
Obviously, it's Benihana.
Yes, you are correct. That is by far the best thing that happened in 2015, which is amazing.
And it's getting easier. In 2016, Tom Hiddleston wore an iconic tank top while being photographed at his then-girlfriend Taylor Swift's 4th of July birthday party. What did the tank top say? I heart New York. I heart Taylor. I heart TS, or Taylor Swift is my girlfriend and I love her very much.
I think it's C. It's either B or C.
I heart TS, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
I heart TS, that tank top.
Still deranged.
Terrible. 2017 saw the end of the 8-year marriage between Fergie and Josh Duhamel. It's so sad. If you saw their divorce papers, however, it wouldn't say Fergie as Duhamel's ex-wife's legal name. What is Fergie's given name?
Stacey Ferguson.
Yes. Wait, what's her middle name? What's her middle name? Do you know?
No. They didn't say that on Kids Incorporated.
It's Stacey Ann Ferguson, but you get Stacey that 100%.
Wow. And the last one, because we don't know the big stories of 2019 yet. It feels like ages ago, but it was only last year, 2018, that saw the hookup and then breakup of Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande. During their short relationship, Davidson got three tattoos dedicated to Ariana. Which one of these did he not get? A sketch of Ariana's pet pig, Piggy Smalls. H2GKMO, aka Honest to God, Knock Me Out. Ariana's favorite cartoon, Winnie the Pooh. Or Dangerous Woman-inspired Bunny Ears.
I'm going to say Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh. And that was a trick question because he already had a Winnie the Pooh tattoo.
What?
Just a
coincidence. He has some of the worst tattoos I've ever seen in my full life, if you want to check those out sometime, eventually. It's actually insane how many bad tattoos this person has.
Can I suggest that you guys in the future do a segment or a game about celebrity tattoos called Who Tat?
Wow. Incredible.
Suggestion taken.
Wow.
Coming
incredible.
Soon to Who Weekly. Who Tat?
Who tat?
We actually don't play enough games anymore, but yeah.
And you are welcome to use "you must not remember this" in case you ever, you know, come across garbage that you don't want your listeners to remember. That's all yours.
You really must not remember any of that.
Is there anything else that you want to plug? I know you're doing a spinoff series that people are contributing to, and I was hoping you would want to talk about that.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to start. That's going to start running at the end of January. It's called Make Me Over. And it's stories about like Hollywood's intersection with the beauty industry. And so it spans from the silent era with the first Hollywood weight loss surgery all the way to the 1990s. And like there's an incredible episode about like black beauty in Hollywood. So I'm really super excited about that. We have eight individual writers who are working on their stories right now. And so it's going to be sort of this American lifestyle where I introduce them and then they run with it. And then I'm working on another season of the podcast that hopefully will be done by next summer, which I don't really want to give details about too much, but it's basically like it's about a female filmmaker in the 70s and 80s.
Cool. Awesome. Fun.
Okay, well, thanks for chatting with us on this episode. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We always learn something. We always learn something from you, Karina. That's thank so you so true. Much.
Things that we actually want to remember, not things that we'd hope to forget.
I forget our episodes as soon as we record them, and I never forget yours.
It's so true.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad I got to play a game.
Thanks. That was a lot of fun.
You enjoyed it.
never think about that game again. You never have to. Although you really should look up the Anne Hathaway statement and just read it once more, because it's like it's a work of art.
All right.
It really is. Bye, Karina. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you bye. So
thank
much.
You. Bye. What was she wearing? Where was she seen? She posted what on Instagram? She's the Who Queen. Tens of people want to know all about the number one Who. Lindsay, Bobby, tell us now. What's Rita Ora up to?
Who is this woman?
Lindsay, what's Rita up to?
She got sick. Well, before she got sick.
She got sick 2 weeks ago.
So
the week of Hoodat, she got sick.
She was
and she
sick.
Canceled her
Wait,
event.
Did she know that we weren't going to do What's Rita Up To and she got sick?
Oh my God. What if she didn't know? What if we're just operating on the same level?
What if she,
you know?
What if she heard that we didn't do it and then she got sick? Like we were responsible for that.
What if we're accidentally controlled? What if we're like voodoo dolling her, but we don't even know it?
That's what I'm thinking. What if?
What would you make Rita Ora do?
No, we're already doing it. We already do
no,
it.
But I mean like not mean stuff. Like
this
good
is
stuff.
Not like being John Malkovich. I can't. I would never do that to
what
Rita.
Would you do to her, like to make her happy?
Well, I only want her to be successful.
If you control her life around her. But like, would you plop her onto an Oscar, like a voodoo Oscar stage? Like, would you plop her onto like a voodoo, like Coachella stage? Like, what would you do?
I mean,
do?
we kind of like voodooed her into like a remake of Oliver Twist co-starring Jude Law's son.
That's
I think
true.
That's
we
enough.
Already did it.
Like, I can't do any more than that. I've already done that. Have you seen the photos from this thing? It's amazing.
Yeah, we've already done the most. Okay.
The most. And yet
okay,
the
so
least.
She got sick. She got sick. She was supposed to perform at a, quote, a free Amazon event in Berlin, Germany, which is just...
That's incredible. She probably was making so much money off of that.
A free Amazon event in Berlin, Germany.
Yeah, sure.
They can afford 100 season of Mrs. Maisel. They can afford to renew Modern Love, which people hate. I don't know. I'm not going to watch that show. They can afford Rita Ora at a free concert in Berlin, Germany. Anyway... She released a statement, not on Amazon, like only to press, and it said, I am so sad to have to announce that I've woken up today poorly and have been ordered by doctors,
she got a doctor's note.
Us, to miss the Amazon event today. I've been looking forward to seeing you all so much. It is a decision that has been taken out of my hands, and I am so sorry for not being there. Nothing makes me happier than performing and seeing my incredible fans, and not being able to do that is devastating. I believe it.
It's pretty funny because that's exactly the note that I would write to you if I was sick. Like exactly word for word. But
next time one of us gets sick and has to miss an episode, I'm going to read that.
Have we ever done that, though? Have we ever... I was thinking, we've never done that, have we?
We've never done that.
Like, we've never gotten sick and been like, oh, I can't record, I'm sick.
No, we've been like, oh, my voice is disgusting, please forgive me.
I sound like trash. if I got like food poisoning or something just like truly terrible, like I couldn't even sit up, then I would write you that note. And
I'm so sad to have to announce that I woke up today poorly and have been ordered by doctors to miss the Amazon event today.
To miss the Who Weekly recording today. Yeah.
A free Who Weekly event. Okay. So she... free Who Weekly event.
Every two
That's
times
what we
a
should
week.
Call every episode. Welcome to yet another free Who Weekly event. Hosted by Cadence 13. Okay. So I really love this. And the reason I found out she was sick is because I didn't look up... I didn't check my Rita Ora Google alerts last week because I was like, oh, we don't need this because we're not doing an episode. So I was reading this week's Google alerts first, and I got this Daily Mail headline. Till death do us part, Rita Ora slips into a cutout bodysuit and skeleton print boots as she transforms into a very racy zombie bride for Halloween. Okay. So I clicked that, and the lead is Rita Ora recovered from a recent illness to celebrate Halloween in her typical sexy style. And I was like, what? She was sick? I didn't know. She was sick. But then she got better, and then she dressed up in a cutout bodysuit and skeleton print boots as she's transformed into a very racy zombie bride for Halloween.
If you were flying as much as Rita Ora does, I would be sick all the time.
She
I can barely have a bad meal.
She's not flying with like you and me and like Dupree on the back of the Delta flight. She's in the private jet.
I understand that, but just what air travel does to you. I fly once, and even if I'm comfortable, I'm fucked for the week.
Are you kidding? All of these rich people that fly all the time, they're like knocking back sleeping pills. They're expert flyers.
I don't know. I stay up past 10 o'clock and I can't function. They say, listen to me.
I can't even begin to understand what it's like to fly as a famous person because it's a whole different category of flying.
Sure. But I stayed up late watching the Affair finale last night.
Wait,
and I am now ruined for the day.
Rita Ora's mom pulls off glam gold dress at 55 as heads out to support daughter. She posed in a doorway, the fringe of her light bob swept elegantly to the side. Vera said, on my way to support my daughter at Rita Ora at the at Cartier event in my at Stella McCartney dress. Hashtag visuals with Vera.
First of all, you know, it's wild that she's only 55. She looks amazing. And I think this was the Escada launch, so she's probably wearing Escada, which is very nice. And she looks incredible.
She's wearing Stella McCartney.
Rita's got great jeans, as we know.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes her actual jeans are not great, but her jeans, genetics are good.
Okay. And with that, we are done with Rita. We're done with this episode. Thank you for listening to the weekly. Call in 619 Who Them if you want to leave a question, comment, and concern for our Who's There episode on Friday. Watch The Affair on all episodes available now on Showtime.
No, don't.
Anytime.
I'm going to cut that from this. If you want to hear Lindsay recap the last episode of The Affair, you can go to our Patreon and subscribe.
Thanks, Karina.
Thanks,
again.
Karina.
Thank you, Karina. Bye.
You or Jayla?
Hey. I want to be famous.